Okay. So, welcome to another episode of Shipping and Handling. I am your host, Jennifer Udden.
And I'm your co-host, Bridget Smith.
We just finished recording an episode of the book club. We read Ethan of Athos,
yes,
by Lois McMaster Bujold. And Bridget just had a very...
Yeah, I think the thing that I really like about her books... And it continues to sort of take me by surprise every time I start reading one of them, which it shouldn't at this point.
But they're like six in.
Yeah. They're so crisp.
Yeah.
They just feel like exactly what they need to be. They have exactly what they need to have, all the right words, all the right plot developments.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, it feels like a refreshing book to read.
And I pointed out that there's no extra. There's no like padding or there's no fat. There's no like extra description. There's no extra characters. There's no extra plot. It's just exactly what it needs to be.
Yeah. And Ethan of Athos, the book we just read, Jen's paperback has 237 pages and my ebook has 191 pages. So it's just a, like, satisfying tight read.
And it's a standalone, so if you have not been paying attention to the book club up until this point, you literally need to know nothing else about the universe.
Nope.
And you can just jump in to this wild tale of one man and his search for ovaries. Sorry, ovarian cultures.
I realized we didn't pick a theme for today.
Nope.
Topic. As you pressed record, I was like, what are we doing?
So it's been a while since we recorded an episode. What's been happening? You've sold some books, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk about those sales yet? Or
sure. By the time we actually put this out, I think they all will have been announced. So I sold the second book for Lee Jurtzen Malone.
Woohoo!
Yay!
And that is a really cool premise.
Yeah.
That's been announced, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's called Camp Griftwood. It's a middle grade.
Such a good title.
I know, right?
Such a good title.
It's a middle grade contemporary about a boy who is a con artist at the summer camp he goes to every year, which is like terrible rundown camp run by a terrible woman. And so he's got like a system down, but there's a wrench thrown into the works when a new girl shows up one summer with a plan to do the exact same thing. And so,
outgrift each other. Yes.
And in the end, they save the camp. It's great. She pitched it to me as Dirty Rotten Scoundrels at summer camp. And it's great. It's so funny and just like, and a fun read with heart. So I'm very excited about that. Also sold an adult literary speculative novel, which we are planning to announce on Monday. So by the time this is done, that'll be out. It's called The Dream Peddler. It's sort of inspired by L.M. Montgomery and in the style of Alice Hoffman. So naturally, I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's about a small town where a man arrives selling dreams on the same day that a small child goes missing. And so it's about how people deal with grief and how we're driven by our innermost desires. And it's just absolutely lovely and moving. And I'm very excited. Penguin bought it, so
yay.
It's going to be great.
Yay.
What about you, Jen? What's up with you?
Let's see. Since I did this, I've had two deals. One's been announced and two that haven't. I sold my first middle grade, actually.
Yay!
This does not mean that I'm looking for middle grade. This was a special case. My client, Maurice Broaddus, who is just the nicest person on the planet. He's such a mensch. I love him.
Nice when good things happen to not good people.
HarperCollins acquired his debut middle grade called The Usual Suspects, which I pitched as Encyclopedia Brown meets The Wire.
Nice.
It's about a kid who is like the smartest troublemaker at his inner city Indianapolis middle school, and what happens when he has to defend himself and his friends against the threat of expulsion when someone brings a gun to campus.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's so good.
Awesome.
I love it so much. I'm really excited about that one. That one comes out in 2018. And then I don't know if this is going to be announced by the time this goes up, but if not,
I can cut it.
I sold a thriller, which I'm very excited about.
Yay.
It is a speculative Cold War thriller about basically set in a world where magic exists, and the Second World War was won by magic, and the Berlin Wall is a magical wall. And there's,
I can't wait to read this book.
And there's a crack in it. And the magic is failing. And, you know, at the beginning of the book, this young female magician is called from the United States over to Berlin to kind of untangle the mysteries of the wall. But, of course, she discovers that there's more going on there than meets the eye. And it's, oh, my God, it's so good. It's this guy, it's this debut novel by W.L. Goodwater. And I'm so excited Yay. For people to read this. I'm yes. just like, ah. And then Soho Press, or Soho Crime, is going to be publishing the fourth in the Linda Walheim Bishop's Wife series of Mormon mysteries, which I'm
nice.
Very excited about, yeah. by Mehdi Harrison. So hopefully that will also be announced by the time this goes up, but who knows? We just got the contract. So yeah, it's been a pretty good, you know, sales, you know, yeah. stretch. Could be better.
Selling things in the summer, I'm like... Always kind of surprised, but also
well, the thing that I really want to sell has not sold, so
yeah,
yet has not sold yet. I mean, so I guess this would be a good, you know, maybe today we could talk about sort of like seasons of publishing, because yeah. I've been getting this question a lot lately from some of my students in the Gotham Writers Workshop class I teach, and from other places where they're like, is there like a bad time to query, or is there like a bad time to go out on submission? And the answer is sort of like no, because like all times are garbage.
Yes. I would say
all times are bad. So.
Second half of December is a bad time to do anything.
Yeah.
And like in July and August, things can be really slow just because everyone's on vacation at different times. And so like, I need to hear from this person, but they won't be back until next week. And once I have their approval, I need to hear from this person, but they will be on vacation next week. So it'll have to wait until the week after that. Mm-hmm. And so things can sort of just like take way longer than they usually do.
Yeah.
But people are still reading. People have more time to read because nothing else is going
yeah,
on.
And also so. Some people still have those sainted things called Summer Fridays.
Yes.
Of song and legend.
Yes.
It's like, ha. Huh.
We're recording one of this episode on the afternoon after a Summer Friday. So
in your office, though.
In
so
my
it's
office.
Like less exciting.
Which I came into specifically from
because
my home.
It is air conditioned because it's yes. hotter than the surface of the sun outside.
But also much more humid than the surface of the sun.
True fucking story. My mom was like, oh my God, it's so hot here. I was like, oh, here too. And she's like, oh, it's hotter here. And I'm like, yeah, and you're adequately air conditioned.
Yes.
Like,
I have a window unit, thank you very much.
I have a window unit that, like, it tries. It tries so hard.
Yep.
I believe in it. I know it loves me. I know it's doing the best it can. I want to throw it out the window. It's so ineffective. I wake up in the middle of the night, I'm like, why am I sweating? Why?
Mine brings it down to a tolerable temperature, but...
I should probably be quieter, because there's still people technically working. Oops. Sorry,
people.
Everybody.
Okay. The only one who's within hearing shouting distance is Kara, the receptionist.
So all she heard was me going, why?
She's probably heading out.
I mean,
anyway.
I told the other question I get is like, you know, when do you get the most queries? And for me, I think that, you know, the most sort of like glut I get is like December because of NaNoWriMo and January because of New Year's resolutions.
Yes. Beginning of the year. Get a lot. But that also is complicated by the fact that the last couple of years we have closed in December.
Yeah.
So a lot of people who would have sent them in December just kind of like set a timer, like set them for delayed sending January 1st. So like we come in the first week of January and I'm like, oh my God, 1,000 queries. It's like those are all the people who would have sent them to you in December.
Yeah. I closed in April and May, and it really wasn't as helpful as I had anticipated, because I closed in April and then I got six client manuscripts.
Oh,
that
no.
I had to edit. So that was my April gone. So then I was like, okay, I'll close to May. And like I'm now caught up in queries, but I'm not caught up on submissions.
It's like the first January through April, the only thing I did was read client manuscripts. They just kept turning in revisions.
I read a really good one the other day.
Ooh. So yeah, and like by the time I got to the end of the pile of like 10 revisions that I had to read, and like I can get through 10 manuscripts, like 10 submissions, a lot more quickly than I can get through 10 client revisions.
Well, yeah, because
you have to read them differently.
Because I think that this is something that a lot of people don't really know, is that, like, you know, even though when you're reading a submission, you're reading it, you know, with an eye to, like, what could be changed or what could be strengthened, it's not to the same level as a client manuscript. Because of the client manuscript, you have to read to the end.
Yes.
You have to be able to speak coherently about what you read.
Yes.
But with a submission, you know, you have to get to the point at which you don't want to read anymore. And yeah. then you can sort of take all those thoughts and respond to the author and be like, no, sorry.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, I can get, like, sometimes I can get through 3 or 4 submissions on a weekend. Just, like,
yeah,
sit down and read them. I can't do that with client manuscripts.
Wouldn't partly that be great?
Oh, my God.
So although bad. I've been getting a lot of proposals lately from clients because it's, like, option material or yeah. one or two of my romance clients who are, like, well-known enough that they can just be like, okay, I'm just going to pitch this on.
Yep.
Some proposal.
I will say we've done that with Emma Mills's next two books. Mm-hmm. We sold it on, like, a chapter at a pitch.
And now you don't get
great.
To read it.
And I haven't read it yet, and I'm so annoyed. I want to read it so much, but it's not written yet.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean,
like, I have to talk about it, and all I can talk about is how great I think it's going to be.
At some point, I need to be able
I
to
I want
say,
to read it so much.
At some point, I need to be able to say something other than flail. Flail. It's all good. Yeah, and it's also tough, like, because I'll go through these periods. Like, right now, I have 2 client things to read, one of which is only a proposal, and one of which, actually just 2 proposals. And then when that's done, I'm like, okay, I don't have anything on the horizon for another couple of months.
Yeah.
Until people send me their revisions. So then I'm like, oh God, I need something. And so then I sort of like get into this like space where I'm like, I need to sign someone else so that so I'm not just like sitting here without any material.
And waiting for people to get back to you.
Oh my God, it's the worst.
Yeah.
I'm out with 7 things right now.
I have
it's like 4, it's like going like this, 5. Like,
come on,
did you read it?
Please?
Did you read it?
Did you read it? Did you like it?
And you know, and there's some editors where like, you know, I'm just beginning to think that they're either avoiding me or not receiving my emails, or I'm just like, all I need is a no.
Yes.
All I need to do is to cross you off my list.
Yes.
Or to know that I can send it to someone else at your fucking company.
Yes. Like,
come the fuck on.
Or at least, if you haven't read it yet, say that. If you're
it's fine. Yeah. I won't be mad.
I do the same thing. I know how long it takes. But, like, if you...
Don't
if,
make me call you. You know yes. how much I hate calling people.
And then you have to tell me no on the phone, and it's so much more awkward for everyone.
Just make it easy for both of us. Come on.
Just, like, write 2 sentences and send me the email.
Yeah.
Or, again, I am willing to give editors so much time if they just respond to my emails and say, I'm so sorry I haven't read it yet, but I still plan to.
I mean, that's the thing, is, like, and this is something that it's...
That buys you another 2 months.
I mean, it's something that I've had to learn, too, as an agent, though. People would rather know that you got their emails and that you're communicating with them. And it's something that I struggle with, but it's always better to just be like, yeah sorry, I haven't read it yet. But I'm trying to think if there's been any like big controversy other than the sort of like general grinding hell that is our current political administration. Oh my God, I heard a great phrase the other day that I feel like I'm going to start working into like my conversations.
Okay.
Someone said like in adjusted Trump by adjusted Trump standards, how are you? Which I feel
so
like
we're all at a baseline bad.
Yeah. So by adjusted Trump standards, how are you? I think it's so useful. The other one my mom's been doing is like when someone asks how she is, she's like, "I'm fine if you don't care what you call fine."
That one's good too. It's like your mom's saying, which I have now like adopted into my life, which is it'll be fine or it'll be over, and either way it'll be over.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's so great.
I heard another version of that, it'll be fine or it'll be terrible, and either way it'll be over. I think they're both pretty good. But I guess the only thing that's the only thing that really comes to mind recently is the incredibly ill-advised HBO alt confederacy, which just like no.
It's like apart from being dangerous in this political climate, it's just so tired. Like, come up with a new idea.
It's so tired. And also, like, there's enough heinous things happening to Black people right now.
Yeah.
Other than, like, reviving this weird fantasy of, like, well, and that's sort of like, you know, I have a lot of feelings about the fact that I really want to see The Beguiled. I haven't yet because I just haven't had my shit together. But I've seen a lot of other movies, though, which is, like, way more movies than I saw, like, even at the first half of the year. But, you know, there's some real concerns about, you know, Sofia Coppola just, like, choosing, like, actively choosing to, like, erase the Black characters from her film. And, you know, in a time where that's happening, and also everything else is happening, like, oh, yeah, I know, an alt-confederacy.
Let's do that.
It's like, let's not say we didn't.
Yes. It's just like, of all the points in even just American history where you can change things.
Well, and you know, and I'm sure that they're going to take some kind of like, you know, modern day, like, you know, slave rebellion stance so that yeah. they can like say that they're, you know, on the right side. But at the same time, like, you can't really have that without glamorizing the sort of other side of it, I think.
Yeah.
And then also, like, you know, like, people are, like, black people are still being denied the vote in a lot of states. Like, come on. Like,
yeah.
Let's not pretend that, like,
voter suppression is the reason we're in this terrible situation.
Let's not pretend that the repercussions of the Confederacy, like, are not still with us today. Like, let's not pretend that that's not still happening. And as someone from the South, I can say that. You know, like, people from fucking Pennsylvania put Confederate flags on their cars.
Yeah. There's, you know, a house like, in Rhode Island that has one that, like, we've driven. And every time I drive past it, I'm like,
it's like, you're in Rhode Island. You're in fucking Island. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one garbage conspiracy dealt with.
Yeah.
Yeah, the reason I want to see The Beguiled is because I am still having my weird Colin Farrell obsession. And he apparently spends most of the movie either being, like, tenderly bathed or hideously mutilated by Nicole Kidman, and I'm just like, I'm there for it. Yep. Actually, I'm fine with that.
Totally. Yeah. Colin Farrell has aged quite well.
Which is incredibly shocking, considering what he was doing for the first 30 years of his life.
Yep.
Actually, no, 35 years of his life. I think he's only been sober for like 10 years. But yeah, no. He does a lot of yoga, apparently, which I find endearing, and I hate it.
Yeah.
I'm like, ew, I hate it. I hate that, A, I know that, and B, that I find it endearing. Ugh. But yeah. Oh, so what else can we talk about? We were going to do a query episode, but only two people sent in queries, so...
Send us more queries.
Send us more queries, and we will try to do that before I go away to WorldCon.
Yay!
And then my attendant travels thereafter.
Until Jen disappears into Europe for a month.
I do. I do. I'm going to Russia, which is like... seemed like a great idea 2 months ago. No, I'm actually kind of really excited to go to Russia because, like, I've never, I mean, I've obviously never been. And, you know, as a history buff, there's a lot to see there. But, like, it's also just, like, what a bonkers time to go. Like,
yeah.
Why not?
Why not?
Why not? Actually, so I have to get a visa because apparently you have to have a visa to travel to Russia, which I did not know until, like, 3 weeks ago. And my,
oops.
The place where I went to get the visa is in the same building as my physical therapist. And I was like, this seems strange. Oh, it is the same building. Yeah,
handy.
But are you doing any other cons this year?
No. No, I'm, well, I'm spending a lot of money being a bridesmaid in this wedding. So
you're a good person.
A lot of my travels are going, it's going to be really fun.
Where is the wedding?
Providence.
Okay.
So it's not like... too bad.
A friend of mine was in, hilariously enough, in a wedding in Jackson's Hole. Or Jackson Hole or whatever. Actual real one, not in space.
Not in space. Alas.
I know, right? Jackson Hole. I had to go to space for a wedding.
Jackson Hole's a beautiful place, though. I understand there's good skiing there, but I was there in July. still beautiful. But yeah, I do find that really entertaining, her use of Jackson's Hole in space.
I know.
With a W.
Hole. Yeah. God, those books are so good. Since we don't really have another topic, I'm just going to talk about this because I've been obsessed with it. So we have our two dear friends, Ellen Kushner and Delia Sherman, for years have been telling me that I need to read the Dorothy Dunnett Legendary Lymond Chronicles, which is like what it's called on the cover of the book. So the first one's called The Game of Kings. The second one is called Queen's Play. I think they're all sort of like chess themed. They're so good. I was like not... I think I gave The Game of Kings like a stab like a year ago or something. And I was just like, eh. I don't know who anybody is. Who the fuck are all these people? Who's rooting for who? I don't know. What's happening? But I took it with me to Tennessee and I read it, while I was there and I was like, oh my God, this is great. I still don't really know what's happening, but I love it.
Yeah. Sometimes you need to read things on vacation in order to give them enough of like,
yeah. And I feel like I needed to read the first one on vacation in particular, cause it kind of sets up the sort of like important, like players, like, in his circle. So he's, like, the guy who's, like, the younger brother of this, like, Scottish family. It's he's Lord Peter Wimsey in, like, 17th century Scotland. Like,
nice.
You know. Down to, like, the absent, like, his father's dead, but, like, nobody liked him, so, like, they're not sad about it. And his mother is, like, really smart and, like, loving and kind. I'm like, oh, hello, Dame Dowager. How are you? But, like, it's, oh, my God, they're so good. So I just finished the second one earlier in the week. I just ordered the third one because I'm just like, well, there's six of them. I love them, so let's go. Let's keep this going.
Yeah. See, I was doing the same with Tana French, and then I was like, no, I have to stop, because otherwise I'm going to be really sad when there aren't any left. So now I'm like, I still have three left. I can dole them out as needed.
So which ones have you read?
The first three.
In the Woods.
In the Woods, the likeness, and Faithful Place. Mm. One of the two place books in this series.
I know.
What's
the other one?
Like, The Secret Place?
The Secret Place.
I'm like, who let you do that? And why?
Literally any other word would have been fine.
Yep.
I remember reading In the Woods and then at the end just being so sad.
Yeah.
I was just like, you so fucking bad. Idiot. You fucked up so hard.
Bad.
You blew this so big.
And it wouldn't big have been time. Hard not to. All you had to do was like act like a human. And then she was like, we can be normal about this. And he was like, no, we can't.
Yeah.
Like, you dumbass.
Yeah.
She's willing to basically pretend it never happened.
Yeah. That's why I don't think I've read any others, because I'm just like, oh my God. I'm so sad.
Well, I had lunch with an editor last week, and we started talking about this for some reason, because it's still like one of my favorite books that I've read this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was telling her about The Likeness. And how it's from Cassie's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And so you actually, like, see, she only kind of, like, deals with some of the feelings from the previous one.
Mm.
But in a way where it seems very clear, like, she doesn't want to talk about it.
Mm.
She's like, I just want to move on with my life.
Yeah.
And, like, marry this nice man. But she also, like, gets, she has to go undercover as this woman who was using her undercover identity. They find a woman who looks just like her and is using an old fake name that she used to go by when she was an
Weird.
Undercover agent.
Oh my God.
And they think it's her for like half an hour before they can get her on the phone.
Oh, wow.
They're like, she shouldn't have been using this identity. What's going on? Wasn't her. So she's been living in this weird, like, codependent pseudo family household of like with like four of her schoolmates. And so Cassie goes undercover as her and, like, inserts herself into this family and sort of, like, falls for it.
Mm.
In a way where you're like, yeah, this is codependent and messed up, but also, like, really appealing. Like, you see why, mm-hmm. like, granted it ended in murder.
Only a little bit.
But
little
they didn't
tiny murder.
Mean to kill her.
Cool motive, still murder. Oh my God.
But it's I really loved that one as well. Just because it was fun to see. I really liked actually seeing Cassie, because I already really liked Cassie from In the Woods. I was like, she's great.
And I did not think she got a fair shake at the end of that book.
No. So The Likeness is her fair shake.
Okay. God, I guess I'll have to read The Likeness. Damn. I don't need any more books to read.
But yeah, this editor I was talking to had thought it was a prequel, because she started it and then got hung up on the fact that this identity had been established before In the Woods. And she was like, what are you doing with a prequel for Cassie? Like, why are you doing this? This is dumb. And I was like, it's not. It's a sequel.
It's actually great.
So she was like, oh, okay, I guess I have to try that now.
What else can we talk about? I don't know. Well, I'm going to Worldcon in Helsinki, Finland, which I am incredibly excited about.
Very exciting.
I'm moderating one panel, and I'm on two others. The panel I'm moderating is on religion in fantasy.
Oh, cool.
Or invented religions, I think.
Mm.
George R. R. Martin was supposed to be on that panel, but he is now no longer on that panel, which bums me out.
Oh, man.
Deeply, because that was going to be awesome.
So
but the other panelists are also really great, so it's not good. And then a panel on nonfiction podcasting, okay. Which hilarious. And then another one on like secrets in fiction.
Ooh.
Which I'm just going to spend the entire time going, secret, secret, I got a secret. which is like the panel of things that Bridget hates. Yes.
Are you going to talk about how mad I get?
I am going to talk about how mad you get about things being withheld from the author.
It's not things being withheld. It's things the first person narrator knows being withheld in order to create dramatic reveals. I just think it's cheap.
Yeah. One of the things I really like about the Lymond books, The Game of Kings in particular, actually all of them, is that you almost are... I don't think that you're ever inside his head.
Okay.
It's all third person.
Yeah.
But it's all told from other people's point of view, sort of like observing him.
Okay. See, that I don't mind.
It's so fascinating because, like, they're people who you think know what's going on.
Yeah.
And then they're sort of faced with this person who's, like, so far ahead of them that they're like, oh, fuck, I know nothing. And then even in the moments where you sort of see him, he's, like, alone and he's sort of just, like, in his thoughts, you still don't really know what he's thinking because there's, like, this remove. It's very interesting. Yeah. It's a very interesting, like, narrative structure, and there's so much going on that you – and so many points of view that you're just like, oh, my – who put this together?
So do you want to talk about how to handle multiple points of view?
Sure, why not?
Since we started that, we don't really have a topic.
No. Oh. Listen, we're recording, okay? We are recording.
In general, I think that it is totally possible to have too many points of view in a story.
100%.
But also, like... with The Nine by Tracy Townsend, which comes out November 14th from Pyre. You should totally pre-order because it's great.
It's got a great cover.
Yes, it does. She has... It's third person, but you, like, see from nine characters' points of view. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not related to the title. That's a coincidence. But The Nine refers to a different
group of nine. Okay. Okay, sure.
But it's something where, like, I did get a pass or two that were like, there's just too much, like, too many characters, but I never thought so. Because they're all handled with roughly the same voice, like, you get variations based on the characters, and, like, this one character doesn't realize that he's the butt of the joke, and this other character is, like, a child, and so her perspective is a little different. But in general, it's the same authorial voice carried through, and so it doesn't feel as jarring as jumping from, like, one first person or one close third to a different close third.
Yeah.
And you also don't mind that. I find it really frustrating when we're supposed to be seeing things through two different characters' eyes, but they sound the same.
That's what I was just going to say. Like, you know, for me, if it's going to be at all close, whether it's close third or first, the voice has to be different, not just the way that they speak in dialogue, but also the way that they speak to themselves and about themselves and about the situation.
Yeah.
And if it's too similar, and even if... And the way that I sort of, like, come down on this is usually sentence structure. Like, if two characters are speaking in the same way, but they're, like, 100 miles apart and have never met and have no common background, I'm just like, okay, well, these two people sound the same, you know? And I can sort of tell, like, that it's, like, a flourish of the author's, which is, like, fine. Like, you know, you have your sort of styles you go back to. But if they sound... the same, if they read the same on the page, if they sound the same in my head, then I'm just like, okay, well, you need to make these two people different.
Yeah.
Otherwise it's just like, well, why not just make it like omniscient third?
Yeah.
Is it omniscient and then third person? I'm very bad at this.
Omniscient third or just like a distant third.
Yeah. Yeah.
Vocabulary. Yay. I want to be able to if you're going to have character voices, I want to be able to read an individual page and know whose head I'm supposed to be in. Yeah. I want to be able to, like, open at random to a page and be like, oh, okay, this is this character. If I can't do that, then partly I just keep forgetting whose perspective I'm supposed to be.
Well, yeah, and especially if you're trying to set up, like, a series, and, like, you want people to stay with those characters for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, you need to have those people, like, make an impression on the reader, because otherwise it's just like, well, I don't know who this is, but I guess I'll just muddle along. Mm.
One of my favorites that I did, the most impressive that I found of this is in The Scorpio Races by Maggie Stiefvater.
Right.
Have I talked about this before?
You talked about it. I have not. I think that I didn't read those because I found the water horse concept silly.
It works surprisingly well.
Did you see that got bought for Sci-Fi?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I'm so excited.
Not Scorpio Races, but The Raven Boys. Catherine Hardwick, I trust her.
This should be good. Let me see if I can just find these two. They were these two passages. So it's got two different narrative points of view, teenage boy, teenage girl. But they're sort of similar voices. It's both in third person.
Mm-hmm. Didn't they print them in different colors?
I don't think so. Not in the edition I had, anyway. Mm. But it has these... There's one point where they're describing the same character. And so you see it from one point of view, and then you see it from the other point of view. And I was just like, this is perfect. Do you want me... Shall I read it? Okay. So they're describing this character named Malvern. Gabriel Connolly here, Malvern asks as he comes into the kitchen. I'm left holding the door open. So it's not in third person, it's in first. Sorry about that. The richest man on Thisbe stands in our house with his arms crossed, his gaze shifting from the cluttered kitchen counter to the collapsed pile of wood and peat by the sitting room fireplace, to the saddle I've perched on the back of Dad's armchair. He wears a V-necked wool sweater and a tie. He's got gray hair and is not good-looking. He smells nice, which I resent. So this is our teenage girl. And then here's our teenage boy describing the same character. The stairs pop and growl as someone heavier than Evelyn climbs them. Benjamin Malvern strides across the room and then stands by the table until I rise to greet him. Malvern, who has been moneyed for his whole life, has that air about him of well-cared-for ugliness, like an expensive racehorse with a coarse head. The glossy coat, the bright eye, the bulbous nose over two fleshy lips. Sean Kendrick, he says, how are you? I'm just like,
do I have to read Scorpio Races now?
It's really good.
Damn it.
And it's a standalone, so it's a quick read.
Okay.
It's not a commitment. But I really love how those two descriptions tell you more about the people who are seeing the character than they do about, or like, the character they're describing.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of thing that I'm sort of, that I want to, the differences that I want to see in different points of view.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah.
Cool. Cool. I mean, it's also tough to sort of make the decision of, like, you know, first person present tense, first person, you know, like, and often, like, I don't really come down hard on either, on any one side, unless I have a very strong feeling that the way it is not working. The other thing that I see sometimes that I sort of, like, have trouble with in edits is that when people are talking about something that happened in the past, they don't do, like, had done. Just like...
The pluperfect?
Yeah. But if it's already being told sort of, like, in a, you know...
In the past tense.
Yeah, then it's like, well, past. You need past, basically. Like, come on.
That can really muck with your understanding of the timeline, too.
Yeah.
If it's told in the same tense when it didn't happen at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. So who would you say is, what would you say is your favorite use of sort of, like, point of view in a book?
Apart from the one I just read?
Apart from the one you just read, yes.
I'm not sure. I'm, like, trying to think about the ones that do them interestingly. What about you, while I think?
Well, the one that, you know, obviously comes to mind just because it was the one that was sort of, like, the most, you know, that we did the most work on was This Is Where It Ends, because it's got four, you know, in addition to having four separate narrators, there's also, like, interstitial, like, tweets and Facebook posts and things like that. And it also is on such a tight timeline that there's no sort of time, really, to kind of, like, draw out the differences in the voice, if that makes sense. Like, it had to be apparent, you know, from page one, who was where.
Yeah.
Things like that, so that the reader wouldn't get, like, lost.
Yeah. Yeah, when you have, when it has to be, when it's done in such sort of a compressed way, you really do have to lean on the voice there.
Yeah. So I guess actually this would be a good, you know, question. What's the difference between point of view and voice? Because I think that some authors don't really, and I don't always, I mean, I feel like sometimes I'm just going like, make it good. Like, just make it good, guys.
Yeah.
Like, just fix the thing. You know, how would you go about describing the difference?
Voice can be a hard thing to describe. I'm just remembering the first time I encountered it as a term, which was in my eighth grade English class. I had written a short story for this competition thing. Back in the days when I thought I still wanted to be a writer, or like maybe, I no longer do. but my English teacher praised it and said that it, I had a really strong voice in it. And I was like, what does that mean? and she was kind of like, it's the way that it feels, the way that it sounds in your head, the way that the character is depicted, through the way they speak, because you can know so much about a character from the way they use slang.
I feel like there's almost two separate things, though. There's the character's voice, and then there's the author's voice. Yeah.
And I think it depends on how close or how far it's supposed to be. So if it's like a very close third or first person, then you have to tell it with the character's voice. If it's a more distant third, then it's more of an authorial voice.
Yeah.
Or like omniscient narrator's voice.
Yes. That would be how I would say it.
Okay.
Well, let's see if we have any questions. I think we had one on the emails, but I don't have access to the emails right now. Actually, no, I do. Okay, so we have a question from Roslyn, who had a very nice note about, apparently she submitted a question sometime last year that we answered and that she was very happy about.
I'm so glad.
Okay, so she has a question. I'm assuming that she's okay with us using her name. Our apologies if you're not. I had started a fantasy novel with an intentionally diverse cast of characters long before I knew about the struggle of the lack of diversity in the genre, but I'm beginning to wonder if it would come across to agents slash the market as trying way too hard to make a statement, especially since it's partially set in what we would consider our reality. What are your thoughts? No?
Yeah.
That's fine?
Yeah. I mean, I have read things where it did feel like it was trying too hard, but more often than not, not the case.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that this is a situation where you sort of trust your gut. Like, if it feels like too much for the story, like, you know, maybe dial some aspect of it back. But, like, honestly, like, the thing you should be worried about most is, like, making sure that depictions of people you're using, you know, are not like, accurate, but, like, good.
Yeah.
Strong. Not sort of relying on stereotypes and things like that. And this is where things like beta readers who are of that background or sensitivity readers, you know, really, really come into fore. But I think that, you know, adding more diversity to stories is never a bad thing.
Yeah.
Almost never a bad thing. I'm sure that someone will find the case and, like, just make it horrible. But but we haven't seen it yet. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Just make sure it's good. And...
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think we have a couple on Tumblr, actually. Every so often they roll into Tumblr. Oh, Sebastian Stan, bless your heart.
Did he have a question?
No, but he's been, I guess, like, he is the thirstiest trainer who, like, always posts these, like, videos of him working out. And I'm just like, oh, okay, guy. Whatever. Cool Shades Anon asks, have you worked with authors struggling with a sophomore slump? How much wiggle room is there usually for a writer who needs a long time to finish another book after a debut? It depends on the contract.
Yeah.
If there is not a lot of wiggle room, then you're SOL. But if it's a one-book contract, then you know.
It's certainly, it helps if you can put them out, like, within a reasonable time frame so people are like, oh, yeah, I liked that person's last book. Let me read the new one.
Yeah.
But, like, you've got some time. Let's, you know... Lee's book that we just sold, her first book was published last February. And so it's been over a year. It'll be 3 years between books. And that's fine. The publisher was eager to have another one from her and had no qualms about oh, no, it's been too long. We can't do this.
But some publishers do have qualms.
Yes.
You know, it just... it really, this is where, you know, you need to work with your agent and kind of like be very upfront about how long it's going to take you.
Yeah.
And then they can kind of clear the way with your editor to kind of let them know what is realistic.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, you know, when you write to deadline, you sort of have to just get used to that.
Yeah. If you don't have a deadline, it's probably better to have a good book than a fast book.
Yes.
But if you're struggling with the deadlines, you need to be very, very communicative. Yeah. With.
Okay. So another question. Writing Al said, "Hello, I loved your episode on character agency. I also freaked out about it. See, my character has a mild panic disorder, and she's put in a situation where she has little control at first, held at gunpoint because classmates wanting revenge. Agency wouldn't be natural for the character at the beginning of her arc, nor in that plot. My question is agency okay to have little of it if that's the flaw in the character overcomes for the story?"
Yeah, I think you need to have it sort of develop over time, and sort of make it clear that part of what she's doing in the story is sort of coming into her own, and beginning to take charge of her life and herself.
Yeah.
But it's as long as it's not like this story could have happened to anyone,
yeah.
which I think is sometimes what happens with characters.
Yeah. Like,
that
don't
have
agency. This person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you can use the inciting incident to elaborate a little bit, to like create a character arc, then that works fine.
Yeah. Okay. Cool Shades Anon says, "What do you recommend for authors who are writing books in a short series? Is it better to finish more than one before querying, or is it okay to have one finish with a general outline for the next?" The latter. The
yes.
last one. Yeah.
Don't write all the books until you have a contract for all the books.
Unless you really just have a strong desire.
Yeah. Sometimes it can work that, like, if you have, you know, all three in a trilogy written, they'll be, like, happy to buy all three, and then you can just publish them, like, 9 months apart and have them all sort of come out quickly. I've seen that happen. But the other thing is that if no one buys them, you've written three books and spent that much time when you could have written one and then a different thing that could maybe sell.
Yep.
So just weigh those possibilities in your mind.
Okay, we actually have a lot more questions, but I have to go. So so we'll try to do those in our next episode. Apologies if we didn't get a chance to answer yours. Bridget, what are you reading right now?
I am currently reading Persona by Genevieve Valentine.
Ooh, one of Barry's clients.
Yes, I love her. She's wonderful. But also the book is really cool. It's set in sort of a future where that combines politics and like beauty pageants.
So not at all like now.
No, no, not at all. It's kind of fun because like Genevieve writes a lot about fashion and costumes and the way that they are used to say things about the people who are wearing them. And so she's turned that interest into a thriller. And so in this world, every country has a face with a capital F, which is just like a person who, you know, makes pronouncements about what's going on and like shows up for like votes at the UN or whatever. And so it's rather than like having the actual people who are making the decisions say these things, they're like, why not have someone who is good to look at do these things? And so it's really interesting the way that's used. And so in this, there's two main characters, Suyana and Daniel. And Daniel is a paparazzo who is taking photos of Suyana as she arrives to like she's signing a contract with the American face for a 6-month public relationship. because nothing is natural, everything is orchestrated. And he's trying to get photos of her as she arrives, but as she shows up, she undergoes an assassination attempt.
Ooh.
And now they're on the run.
Oh, cool.
So it's very exciting. And I like the way she writes, which is not, it's very literary. It's not thriller-y in style, which makes it for a fun combination. And I'm, I'm about 100 pages in, so I'm interested to see where it goes.
Cool.
What about you, Jen?
I am currently reading A Darker Shade of Magic by V.E. Schwab.
Nice.
It had been on my list forever, and I finally picked it up, and I'm nearly done with it. I'm about, I think, like 150 pages from the end. It's really good.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying it. The world building is really cool.
So cool. Yeah.
And there's more of it, so I'm like, oh, good.
Yes.
There's more.
The second one's really fun because it's a magic tournament, and I was like, yes! It's like sports, but magic.
Yes.
And it was very cool.
Awesome. Well, thanks for bearing with us during our absences. We'll try to do better.
We should do another before you go away.
We will be trying to record one more before I go to Europa for a few weeks. But in case you haven't been tuning in, we did another episode of the Shipping and Handling Book Club, which has just been posted. And we will be trying to do a query episode sometime in the near future. So if you're interested in having us critique the query, please send it in to shippingandhandlingpodcast@gmail.com. As always, send your questions, comments, concerns, suggestions to the same email address, shippingandhandlingpodcast@gmail.com, or via Twitter or via our Ask Box on Tumblr, where you can ask cool shades anonymously. Thanks for tuning in.
Bye.